Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Well, hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. As always, we thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. This is part of a very special female empowerment series that we are rolling out this summer of 2022. We've had the chance to sit down with some awesome leaders across the workforce ecosystem, and that is certainly the case in today's episode. I'm your host, Angela Alberti, and I can't tell you how excited I am to sit down with Sunny. Sunny, can you give us a quick background on yourself, please?
Sure. I've been in the recruitment industry for 28 years, currently working with S3. We are the world's only pure play STEM specialist organization, placing contract and perm talent in science, technology, engineering, and math disciplines. A global organization, 15 countries, 2,600 employees. And our purpose really is to bring skilled people together to build the future. And it's really the nature of our business is to connect talent with companies and solve also some of the most challenging problems that companies have. And I feel we're doing a pretty good job of that today.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you've been in the staffing recruiting space, you definitely have heard of S3. And I know that this is a newer endeavor in part of your career timeline. You mentioned 28 years. Can we take a step back and kind of go through what that timeline is like? I always think it's interesting how people find themselves within this space. So I'd love to hear a little bit more of that deeper dive into your career timeline.
Recruitment's interesting. I think people do not typically graduate either university or, you know, come out of school or start looking for a job and say, I'm going to be a recruiter. It's one of those industries that tend to find people. And I think when people enter into the industry, they find it so enlightening and it's such a challenging sector. I was drawn to it right out of college, actually looking for work like many people. I had a friend of mine that was actually working for a recruitment company. She was relocating, moving out. Her job was coming open and she said, hey, you'd be great at this. It's talking to people. It's matching people with jobs. You have to learn a little bit more about the IT discipline, but I think you'd be great at it. You're outgoing. So I interviewed within a day, got the position and started with a company at the time called Sperion, which is now, it was actually Interim Personnel, which now is Sperion, which of course is owned by Randstad, but started my career with them as actually an IT recruiter. And I'd say over the past 28 years have experienced pretty significant growth. I've always been in, I was in individual contributor roles many parts of my early on in career, then moved into management, fell in love with management, leading people and developing teams, and worked the majority of my time with a company called Manpower Group. I was there 15 years and had the opportunity to join S3 last year and jumped at the opportunity to really lead a fantastic team scaling and growing the business in North America. But it's been an interesting ride because, again, I still, and I describe what I do even to my mother to this day. She tells people I help people find work. And so I'm always getting resumes from a number of people in my family and friend network. And so I'm always connecting people because she doesn't quite understand really what I do, but she knows I help people find jobs. I'm like, well, that's
just in that industry, right? Yeah. Matches. Yeah. The headhunting, as they used to call it.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So you've been with S3 now for going on a couple of years. For those that aren't familiar with the STEM industry and the STEM industry in general, can you give a little bit of background on the type of industries or placements, specializations, niches that you guys particularly service?
And STEM industry, I would say, is more diverse and accessible to many individuals in the organizations today. When we think about STEM, it's science, technology, engineering, math, the sectors that we tend to play in or focus in is really technology, engineering, and life sciences. And in life sciences, fairly niche. We focus in on the pharmaceutical and medical device area of life sciences. In engineering, we focus on very specific niches being power utilities, renewables, which is a very fast growing area right now in the US market in particular, as well as manufacturing. And then technology, again, very niche as well. We focus in anything within the Salesforce ecosystem. Anything from development ops types of roles to admin, Salesforce admins to Adobe. We also focus on kind of mobile technologies as well. So we tend to focus on where the opportunities are to access talent, but also where there's significant demand. And again, specializing in those skills with a handful of recruiters across the US, We feel like we provide a really interesting value proposition and being able to access the right talent at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. So a very broad array of focus that you guys have and an integral component of what is considered the future of work. I always think it's interesting because when you're thinking about the staffing and recruiting space, there's a certain level of resilience that you have to be in this industry, particularly as you're getting your footing within that recruiting space in those initial years, because let's be honest, there's a significant amount of rejection that you have to face when you're speaking with candidates or even clients. Now let's couple that with the pandemic and the talent war, as it's been coined as, that we're dealing with when we know there's simply just not enough supply, perhaps in many of the niches that you guys focus on, for the demand that is out there. So I'd love to get your thoughts on the culture that you look to enable within your own team to create and have a winning mindset, and even go through the climactic conditions that the talent world is facing right now. Can you speak to a little bit about some of the culture that you guys have created?
Yeah, it's been a unique environment for any business leader and any individual in business in the past 2.5 years. I think, again, you and I were talking at the beginning of the call. I think there's a lot of unprecedented things that a lot of leaders and individuals have experienced. We continue to experience in our current environment. You know, what we think is, you know, kind of set and stable, there's always kind of flux and things changing. And recruitment's always been a sector, I think, that does provide that level of change. Because you're working with talent, you're working with companies, and you're working with technologies and different types of things to be able to access the right talent. So there's a good deal, I would say, of resilience, but also individuals that have a really good deal of continuous learning desire to be able to, you know, ebb and flow with the environment, but also be able to also know sometimes change is, you know, change is the one constant in the business, and being able to navigate that is the most important thing in your role. But being able to come out on the other side and really kind of focus on where we can make impact. The culture within S3, we really have tried to focus on, you know, employee first, and really, you know, really listen to our frontline employees around what they're needing and wanting within the current work environment. We are a hybrid work environment. We initially took a survey last year when we started to reemerge from COVID, determining what this business, you know, environment is going to look like. And none of us really knew. And I think some of us don't even know if this is going to hold the next 1.5 to 2 years. So we're trying to navigate that. But again, listen to the frontline individuals and say, what do they want? How do they best work? And we witnessed during COVID a real resilience for a number of people to be able to come out of that and be able to work in an environment remotely and be as effective as they were in an office, but in a very different type of environment. In fact, S3, we grew net fees during COVID from 2020 to 2021, 2%. Not many organizations can say that. And I think it was really the resilience of the teams. But again, now coming out of it, we're coming in back into the work environment and navigating what it means to be in the offices. And we're thinking about, you know, really hybrid with a purpose. So how we utilize the offices should be different than what you're doing at home. So you should be going into the offices for coaching, connectivity, you know, really community. If you can't, you know, if you can get what you have at home on a video call, the same in the office, you shouldn't be going into the office. The office experience should be very different for individuals. So again, really looking at that feedback that we received from our employees to really determine what that looks like. And I think that is fairly a constant within our business, is really surveying our staff. We do quarterly employee net promoter scores within our business. So net promoter score is something we do with clients and candidates. We also do an internal NPS to really gauge what individuals are feeling, seeing, hearing, what they want more of, less of. And we really try to respond to that feedback on a quarterly basis to our business worldwide. So feedback from our employees is probably the one constant and part of a key part of the culture.
Yeah, it's a super critical component. I love how you broke out the dichotomy of what the work from home life should bring you. It's that productivity, the fact that you're, you know, heads down, being able to focus on your work, but simply that dynamic and having the balance with the office life, that connectivity, that culture, the getting to know your peers at a level that you wouldn't have because you're at a water cooler break, and talking about life. So that's a very wonderful feedback, especially when you consider some of the surveys that you guys have done internally. Sunny, when it comes to what you're thinking. We hear about this often, the future of work. What does the future of work look like? You guys are at the crux of a very important industry that's going to enable many future of work trajectories. What does the future of work mean like to you? Knowing that this answer is somewhat subjective and even philosophical, what do you think the workforce would be looking like in maybe 5 or 10 years?
It's a great question. I think if we had a crystal ball, I think, you know, that would be a great talent that any of us would have to be able to predict that. And again, it goes back to that resilience and being able to navigate some of the complexities and also the change. The global shift towards, I would say, increased use of contingent workforce, shorter job tenures, rapidly growing societal preferences toward remote or hybrid working arrangements is something we're absolutely seeing and I think is here to stay. I don't think we'll go back to 5 days a week. I'm predicting that now. I could be, you know, eating my words about 2 years from now, but I don't see that happening because there's been so many benefits that people have been able to gain from working in a hybrid type of environment. But also that need for flexibility has accelerated as a result of the pandemic, which has led to, I would say, also a reliance on technology in a good way. So we all pivoted overnight, you know, deployed 3,000 laptops worldwide and had people working from home, really reliant on technology. Right. And we're seeing that only, you know, internally in our business, but also with our, you know, individuals we place into jobs, the, you know, the ability to kind of be understand the technologies and the different type of operations they're working in and really keeping kind of, you know, honing their skills and keeping up to date with the different types of things they need to do in the work environment that they're in. And, you know, I think the demand for flexible working is the, you know, kind of recurring kind of nature of S3, you know, again, providing that greater visibility, but also predictability of just, you know, we know what's working and what's, you know, what we need to navigate and change. So it is a constant change right now, but I think overall, we're at a good point right now from a future of work perspective. But again, we're continuing to survey, to navigate what we can do more of, less of, type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, fantastic response. I think I'm right in line with you. I see more of a demand for contingent work, that flexible, short-term, project-based, contract-based type of working lifestyle, whether you're here or, you know, having a sip of coffee at a cafe in Paris. Maybe yeah. That was something irking underneath me that would love to do that one day as well.
That sounds great, Angela. I'll go
yeah, with you. It does, right? So when I think about your background, Sunny, and this 28 years that you've had a chance to be a part of the industry, we're really talking about the growth of what has been the staffing industry into this $500 billion, I think is what SIA's recent analysis is estimating at a global level. You've seen many things. You saw the rise of technology, the dot-com bust. We're going through the implementation of the MSP, the VMS now. A lot of what has been a part of this new phase in the staffing space is AI and automation. And sometimes there's this connotation that there's a boogeyman here. I mean, there's going to be this complete replacement of the recruiter because of the sourcing technologies are capable out there through technology. Any thought to that, that you think is interesting based on what you've seen and coming out of this industry from a different perspective?
Technology is fantastic. I mean, again, when I started many, many years ago, we did not have some of the basic functionality that technology had. And I tell stories to people in terms of how he would, you know, identify recruiters and how he would sort through card files and things. I mean, again, it's really enabled the recruitment industry to be much more, I would say, effective and efficient in the operations that we're in. It's allowed us to access talent very differently. It's allowed us to engage with talent and clients very, very differently. And I would say technology is a good thing because it does allow us to automate and augment some of the work that frankly is monotonous or repetitive or areas where, you know, if we can replace with technology or AI to help us with it and still have that connectivity with clients and candidates, fantastic. But it allows our frontline recruiters and our sales individuals to be, you know, more client and candidate facing. And with that, I believe technology is going to only, you know, continue to accelerate. But at the end of the day, the role of a recruiter, the role of an individual in recruitment or staffing, there is a trust element and there's a rapport element that I think, to me, cannot be replaced by technology with candidates and clients.
Right.
And that part of the service in which we offer is so unique and something that is really kind of, you know, very, very natural to the recruitment industry. So, you know, being able to fully automate that, some clients might want that, some candidates might want that, that's fantastic. But I think in for the most part, clients and candidates are also seeking that connection, that rapport, that trust in who they're working with. And sometimes that face-to-face connectivity, you know, phone call, whatever it might be, does provide that level of engagement and value to the client. You know, and at the end of the day, I would say clients and candidates want to know who they're working with. Mm-hmm. We have relationships with many of these clients and candidates that we redeploy back into positions and jobs that come to us to help them find their next career. So again, I think that, you know, technology seems would be a little bit cold, whereas, you know, being able to have that human touch in the right areas is really important.
Yeah, that human rapport for the human capital industry is super critical. And hearing you, it's almost this innate level of emotional intelligence that a solid recruiter, a solid account manager may have, because there's so many different variances of how you deal and communicate with folks, and you got to know when to pivot and when to be agile every single day. Super cool feedback. I'd like to peel it a step back now and kind of get to know you at a personal level. After all, this is a female empowerment series, and maybe selfishly, I'm asking some of this for my own advice. But any feedback for maybe the female, maybe not. Maybe it's that go-getter that's looking to rise up within this industry that you could give them when it comes to what you've learned along the way. Sometimes the best way to learn is by simply asking those that have gone through it. Same reason why, you know, when my kids are sick, I call my mom, you know, before I probably call a doctor. So any feedback that you would have for the listeners out there that are looking to grow into this career within the staffing and recruiting space?
I would say, first of all, it's an incredible industry. I'm always talking to people about the work that we do because it is such meaningful work. We help people find, you know, careers and employment, and it is something that has a great deal of impact on me personally. And I think individuals that get into this business and really have a love and passion for it are fueled by that. I think as a woman coming into recruitment, and specifically within STEM, it's a really fantastic area to be able to move and navigate your career into. The advice I would get is, and again, I think there's so many things that I now recognize. I would say, you know, I feel like I've been on the other side of my career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the case early on in my career, there was things that, you know, I was coming up very, very ambitious, being told no and having to delay expectations was somewhat frustrating for me. And I think now, you know, I've learned to be comfortable being uncomfortable and accepting some things that just change, and navigating change is a really important thing. And, you know, I think as women working in the industry, and it's something, you know, I've been a lifelong, you know, advocate of closing the gender gap and really technology, but also women in recruitment, because our industry as a whole also has, you know, our own set of challenges in terms of women in management and women in leadership ranks. And there's a lot of work that great organizations are doing around this, like SIA and ASA. But I also say never underestimate the power of women supporting each other in the workplace. I think now that we're remote and or hybrid, you know, seeing things kind of on video calls, helping each other out, advocating for each other, being really in tune with that, and making sure your voice is always heard in the business setting. You know, there's still not enough of us at the table, but it's imperative for those that are, that we really use our voice to create more seats and spaces for women in the future. So I feel like my role now that I'm a bit on the other side of my career is I have a commitment and a responsibility in doing that. And I think every woman that is in a senior level position should be looking at that as a bit of a responsibility as well that they have in our industry. And everyone should be striving to be an ally. I've really seen a really good movement around allyship the past several years, you know, in our space. And so there's a lot more men leaning in and really understanding the space. And so I think that's a really important piece too. I would say the area really, you know, again, women supporting other women is a big one for me. And any woman in senior leadership, if you're not doing that, you should be. So,
yeah. And, you know, I think back about, you know, when I started off and where it's been now, and it's really lovely to see this resurgence of supportive networking amongst women and females within this industry. It's almost refreshing, because maybe it was the onset of the pandemic that has really even brought this furthered connectivity. But I want to bridge on a little bit further on one of the points that you made and women supporting women, right? And I've had the chance to do these episodes with many different powerful women, yourself included. Can you talk to me about, and the audience, about the value of mentorship and what it's done for you in your career, and perhaps a testimonial of somebody that has brought in value and mentorship to your career?
It's interesting. I would say I had informal mentors, or mentors we didn't even call them mentors back in the day. And I reflect back on my career, and there were several individuals, women and men, that actually were a bit, that mentored me in different ways, that would, wrap their hand around my shoulder. I remember being newly promoted from a senior regional director to a vice president of a very large piece of business with a manpower group. And I was the youngest to be promoted into that role. Really, and it happened overnight. It was a bit of a change that happened to the leadership role, and I was on the talent slate. So had to come into the role really quickly and navigate really that dynamic in a very, very large organization. And I had one particular woman that really wrapped her hands around me and really said, I want to help you navigate this. And she was actually the only other woman at the table at the executive level. Her name is Kathy Page, and she was incredible. And to this day is probably one of my biggest supporters, is now is retired and has watched me throughout my career move into different areas, and has been a huge mentor to me early on and a sponsor. But I would say also now that she's on the other end of her career and retired, she's someone that also provides me continuous kind of guidance and support. So I think that's a really important piece. And again, paying it forward, giving back, committing, investing to the next future, generation along the way. Sponsors and mentors were influential in my career through direct interaction and observation. So I learned a great deal from experiencing, and I think I continue to gain a lot of that knowledge today. But it's an important area. And mentors, I would say, advise, sponsors act. And sponsors sometimes have a stronger voice. And so we need more sponsors with women in leadership as well, really sponsoring women to the new roles or to different positions or positions of authority. So that's a really important area that we need to be also talking about.
Wow. You, as the cool kids would say, are just dropping the mic left and right. It's really exciting to hear some of the things. And I feel a sense of invigoration in speaking with you and what my own personal duty should be at this point in my career. Okay. So let's think about it from this perspective now. You've got this, you're sitting as president for S3 in Americas, and you've got this busy, busy life professionally. I'm sure you've got a lot of things going on personally, that is. What do you do? Any tips on what has helped you throughout, the course of your own life and staying organized and on top of the thousands of things that are in front of us every single day?
Yeah, I would think we would used to compartmentalize work and life, or kind of work-life balance. And to me, they've kind of merged, and they've been merging for the past several years. And so really understanding that the two kind of connecting and navigating that, we witnessed that during the pandemic, being in people's homes, seeing people's families, seeing the challenges and the issues they were going with. And we still see it today. And I love that aspect of it. I love when the kids pop in and we've got dogs and we've got crazy things happening in the background. And so I think it's exposed all of us to a bit more of that, get to know people beyond just the work. And I think, really understanding that there's something beyond the camera with individuals when they shut the camera off, what they're really doing, how are they doing it, and being able to really understand that piece of it. So again, I think of myself, the work-life balance is something, again, it's merged, but it's something I try to really focus on. I would say now more than ever during the pandemic, really walking, taking time. I started meditating last year, doing kind of 3-minute meditations.
That's awesome.
To really kind of focus my mind, because, I tend to have kind of a brain that gets all over the place at times. And so I have to kind of pull things back in and focus. Yeah. The number of things that I do there. And then I just love to, relax at the end of the evening with my husband and typically watch him cook dinner, because I don't tend to enjoy really nice dinner. So I watch him as he's cooking and we have a nice conversation and kind of typically try to remotely work at the, work at work. Yeah. I think it's a constant challenge for people, because again, so much is merged in a good way, but because it has merged over the past couple of years, a lot of that stuff tends to kind of creep in on things. And so you have to really be able to kind of distance and be able to have that time as well for yourself and your family.
Yeah, there's definitely that fine line that we're crossing, knowing that everything is connected to this little a mechanism that's just a few feet away and knowing when to draw the line. I love how your response to that was, you know, taking some time for yourself. I think I'm learning that, you know, it's the only time where I don't have emails or husbands or kids is when I work out in the mornings, and then, and making sure that you do dedicate time to those that are around you when you can, which is probably in the evenings. All right, so we are living in the information age. We have to be very careful about the information that we do consume. What is part of our content diet? What is part of your content diet? How are you staying up, perhaps with the different trends that's happening within STEM and then the staffing industry, or even personally in terms of the information and the content that you consume?
I listen to, I tend to really learn through listening. It's kind of I don't mind reading, but I love to listen to things. And I really got into podcasts during the pandemic. I always subscribe to things like Wired and Inc. and a number of different magazines, Harvard Business Review, you know, great things like that. And then I started subscribing to their newsletters, you know, online and getting emails. You know, McKinsey, which is a consulting firm, has great, you know, articles and insight around workforce and workforce trends. But I really love listening. I think it's a way in which I really, you know, tend to absorb information, but also recall information. And it has an impact on me hearing people's voice and their inflection when they're talking about something and their energy. And my content diet tends to be fairly positive, I would say, you know, but also very insightful around workforce trends and talent and leadership and how leadership are navigating different areas of the market today. So everything from Brené Brown, which, you know, I absolutely adore, you know, Dare to Lead. I also love, you know, Glennon Doyle and, you know, her podcast, Abby Wambach. And, you know, there's a number of really personal things there that I also learn from. But, you know, there's a number of key, you know, other podcasts I will listen to around kind of leadership and leadership development. So there's a lot of different content you can kind of gather online through email. And I think, again, as you mentioned, Angela, like, you know, working out in the morning, that's where I tend to listen to a lot of different things. I love the New York Times, the Daily, takes different headlines or different things that are happening kind of socially in the market and talks about that and digest it. I love the Skim. I have to admit that I still read the Skim, and I love Skim because it gives you those kind of brief skimmed headlines from the news. I tend to listen and do read, quite a bit, probably more than most.
I love how you're saying that everything that you do listen to is either for your own personal benefit or for the benefit of what you choose to represent as a leader. And there is this very delicate black hole that we can get sucked into when it comes to how quickly and vast this information age is and the news that we can choose to consume ourselves. So positive feedback. Now, if our audience wants to get in touch, wants to find out more information about S3 or perhaps with you directly, how can we find you? And knowing that these are probably recruiting and staffing folks, which mean we're undercover PIs most of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, recruiters are the best investigators or PIs. I always tell my husband that you need to know something. I will find someone that knows someone.
There you go.
Yeah. So S3.com is our global website, and it will take you directly to our US site, which will also list our different go-to-market brands that we have that operate under S3 and Specialist Staffing Group. To reach me personally, you can reach me at Sunny Ackerman on LinkedIn. Happy to connect. Love hearing from people. Love to broaden my network on LinkedIn. Love to connect with other individuals doing great things in the market to learn and to glean more information from as well.
Awesome. And I have been connected with Sunny for some time now on LinkedIn, and I can personally attest to the fact that she shares some fantastic information, very informative content that you share out to the masses. Sunny, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it. Definitely a source of information and inspiration for me and our audience as well. I always think that time is the most valuable gift that we can give to one another. So I'd like to thank you and our listeners as well for tuning in.
Thank you.
All right, guys, we'll see you on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.